All right, hey everyone. My name is Carrie Deans. I'm a PhD student in the entomology department at Texas A&M, and I work in Greg Sword's lab and also Spence Beamer's lab. And so today I'm going to talk to you a little bit about some work we've done trying to sort of characterize the nutritional requirements for the western tarnished plant bug. So, as we've already heard in the first couple of presentations today, Lagus species have become an increasingly more problematic pest of cotton. And this is due largely to resistance that has already been discussed, but also, especially in Texas, due to the increased use of BT crops, which really has reduced the need for spraying more broad spectrum insecticides. And unfortunately, very little is known about the feeding ecology of sucking pests in general, including Lagus. And of course, understanding these sort of plant-insect interactions is really important for developing successful long-term IPM strategies. And so a little bit about Lagus feeding ecology. They're highly polyphagous. I think they're definitely one of the highest host plant ranges recorded for any insect, almost 400 plant species. And it's not really known why this is, but there could be a couple different reasons. So they could possess post-ingestive mechanisms that may allow them to feed on many different plants with different secondary compounds, but also as far as pre-ingestive mechanisms, they're known as cell rupture feeders, but there's also evidence that they can access phloem and they can access xylem, so they really have access to a lot of different plant tissues, which may also help explain this. And as we've already heard, they occur in a lot of weed species and actually don't prefer cotton as a resource. And they often will reproduce and overwinter in these other species and then, as mentioned, move into cotton sort of later in the season. And so understanding these sort of nutritional requirements may help explain sort of the factors that play a role in the movement into cotton systems, but also their feeding ecology once they're already there. So with that in mind, the objective of this study was really just generally to start to understand what these requirements are in terms of macronutrients. So we wanted to determine if Lagus regulates protein and carbohydrates in their diet, so if they're actively selecting tissues based on these nutrients. But we also wanted to know if they are, what's sort of their optimal ratio. And the rationale for looking at protein and carbohydrates is that they're biologically necessary, but also insects can detect amino acids and sugars within the plant. And so these macronutrients have the ability to direct sort of feeding behavior. But also there's strong evidence for a wide range of insect species that protein and carbohydrates have strong effects on performance variables such as mass gain, survival, fecundity, and also on more complicated physiological processes like immunity and detoxification ability. And we also know that plants are widely variable in protein and macronutrient content. So you can get variability within a single plant just looking at different tissues, but you can also get variability in different stages of the plant as it grows, and of course in different environments, and then between species. So some data that I presented last year, we actually explicitly measured digestible protein and non-structural carbohydrates in cotton because most of the data that exists as far as plant nutrients is elemental, which is useful for plant physiology, but for insects, they really are selecting macronutrients, not elements. And also you can get discrepancies in if you have a measure of carbon, let's say, in a plant, a lot of that carbon is going to be non-nutritional. It's going to be cellulose and things like that. So we actually did a study where we explicitly measured these compounds. And I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I just wanted to show here we have different cotton tissues in both field-grown plants in F, and then G represents greenhouse-grown plants. And I just wanted to show how variable it really is. I mean, even within the same environment, you get a lot of heterogeneity as far as protein and carbs. So these insects are really foraging in a very heterogeneous environment. So So we have sort of this relationship between plant nutrients and insect performance, which then undoubtedly impacts damage that we see in cotton and the economic losses that they incur. But really, very little is known about this side of the spectrum, the sort of plant-insect nutritional interactions. So the way that we approached this was we wanted to sort of use artificial diets that we could manipulate. We used the standard Muritic diet, and we just made some alterations to it so that we could actually manipulate protein and carbohydrates and get a wide range of ratios. And then we basically did a choice experiment where we let an individual select between two diets that they were given. And so we used final instar nymphs. And so we just measured their consumption over the last instar. When they had closed to adults, we ended the experiment. And so we offered them two diets, and then we basically measured consumption of each diet, and then were able to calculate exactly how much protein and carbohydrates they ingested. And then we could use this to get an idea of what they were selecting for, which is assumed to be sort of their optimal diet. And we had 20 replicates per treatment, and I'll go over the treatments in more depth soon. For performance, we didn't spend too much time with performance because this was our first go at it, so we kind of were more focused on could we measure consumption, could we see regulation, but we did measure mass gain, so I'll present that data. So this is just a graphic of sort of what it looks like. So we have the nymphs in a clear plastic container with the wire mesh lid, and as shown in the second talk, we have diets packed in parafilm, and they're just placed on top, and the nymphs can feed from both of them. So here's a figure showing the different diet treatments we use. So if you can sort of imagine a nutrient space delineated by the amount of carbohydrates and protein, each one of these lines represents a diet with a specific ratio of these two macronutrients. So we had a carbohydrate biased diet, which is 24% protein, 50% carbs. And then we had a protein biased one, which was 50% protein, 24% carbs. Then we did a 1-to-1, which is a 37-37. And then the 32-42 was actually the ratio found in the rearing diet, so we decided to use that also. And it's important to note that although there's differences in the proportions here, the total macronutrient content is the same for all of these diets. So they're very nutrient-rich, about 74% total macronutrients. That's by dry mass of all the solutes. And then what we did is we took these five diets and we created different pairings, and these made up the treatments. So we have the sort of coral-colored treatment shows the individuals in this treatment had access to pretty much all of this nutrient space, if you want to think of it like that. And then we had sort of a restricted range that was more carbohydrate biased, and then a restricted range that was more protein biased. And the first thing that we wanted to check for was basically to see if they were selectively feeding. So it could be they have two diets, they could have just randomly been feeding on both of them, not really selecting. And what we found was in all the treatments that they were actively selecting one diet pack over the other, which was good because it shows that they have the ability to detect the differences within the diets. So feeding was not random. Now, if we just focus on protein consumption, we can see here each one of these dots indicates the amount of protein and carbs, the average amount of protein and carbs that individuals in each treatment selected for or consumed. So if we look at just protein here, we can see there's some variability. We have basically treatments 2 and 3 grouped together. So individuals in these treatments consume statistically the similar amounts of protein. However, treatment 1, they actually consumed significantly less, which isn't too surprising given that that's the more carbohydrate-biased pairing. They may not have been able to actually meet the protein requirements that the other two selected for. And if you average the consumption in these two groups, you end up with consumption of about 112 milligrams, which is an arbitrary quantity at this point, but it'll make sense soon. Now, if we look at carbohydrates, we can see a little less variability compared to protein. Here we actually get the first treatment, and the second treatment is statistically similar for carbohydrate consumption. And the first treatment and the third are statistically similar, but the second, third are different. So what I did here is I chose to just use the consumption that we got in the first treatment, and that was about 87, 88 milligrams. So when we look at protein and carbohydrate consumption, we end up showing that Liget seemed to be selecting for an intake target with a PC ratio of about 1.3, so slightly protein biased. And if this is an indicator of what their best or most optimal diet is, you can tell it's slightly protein biased, which makes sense considering that they tend to feed on squares and bowls, which have a little higher protein content compared to leaves. So for the one measure of performance that we did look at, which was mass gain, we saw kind of a trend where the more carbohydrate biased pairing, the individuals didn't seem to gain as much mass, but really there's no statistical significance between any of these. So, and this really isn't surprising because other studies have shown that when insects have the ability to mix their diet, they can actually compensate for a lot of deficiencies, and so performance doesn't tend to really be that different. All right, so in conclusion, we found that Liget did not feed randomly on these diets, so they can detect differences in terms of protein and carbohydrate content, and they also actively regulate for these, which we've shown, and their intake target is slightly protein biased. Mass gain is really doesn't tell us much at this point. However, for future work, what we would like to do is really do another choice experiment using a couple different pairings, see if we get the same intake target, see how defendable that target is, and then probably more importantly, do some no-choice studies where we put individuals on one diet, some that are in the optimal range, some that aren't, and really see how they're able to deal with imbalances as far as these macronutrients are concerned. And then also lastly, once we have a better idea as far as how their performance is related to nutrition, we can incorporate other things, other plant secondary compounds that may undoubtedly affect feeding. So these can be things like gossypol and cotton, but also if we think about transgenic plants, we can incorporate cryoendotoxins and see how does that change their performance and also maybe their feeding behavior. Do they feed less or do they feed on different tissues? And so that's sort of our ultimate goal. And with that, I would like to thank all my committee members and Greg Sword's lab and Spence Beamer's lab and our funding sources. Thank you.
We have time for a couple of questions. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.